Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today is February 25th, 2026, and we are firmly, undeniably in the second half of the 20s.
Yeah, it really feels like we just blinked and half the decade vanished, doesn't it?
It really does. And usually when we sit down to parse these huge stacks of reports you bring in, we are looking at one specific big thing, you know, like the AI deep dive or the VR deep dive.
Right, the climate tech one.
Exactly. But today feels a bit different.
It is different, because if you look at the research we have on the table from the United States Data Science Institute, the SAR Council Journal, MHP, and Oxygenity, the era of the single big thing is effectively over. We aren't really looking at isolated gadgets anymore.
We're looking at a collision.
Exactly, a collision. Or, you know, better yet, a stack. Technologies that used to live in their own little silos are now layering on top of each other to create something completely new.
So we are building the 2026 tech stack today. We have four pillars to get through. And I have to say, looking at the outline, this sounds like a sci-fi novel that's actively happening in corporate boardrooms right now.
It does sound a bit buzzy, I admit. We've got quantum AI, agentic AI, spatial computing, and green ops.
See, that's quite a mouthful.
It is, yeah. But think of it this way. We have the brain, the hands, the eyes, and the conscience.
Okay, I like that structure. It makes it sound less like a spec sheet and more like an organism.
That's the goal. We want to explain to you how these aren't just cool concepts for 2030. These are the tools rewriting business rules, training methods, and sustainability goals right now, today.
So let's start at the bottom of the stack, the foundation, the engine. We are talking about quantum AI.
This is the heavy hitter.
Now, I need you to help me parse this report from the United States Data Science Institute, because quantum AI feels like someone just smashed the two most expensive words in tech together to see what would happen to stock prices.
Right.
Is this a real discipline, or is it just, you know, marketing fluff?
No, it's very real, and it's distinct from just AI or just quantum. Think of it as a functional fusion. The report breaks it down like this. AI provides the thinking, the learning, the reasoning, the prediction models. But quantum computing provides the processing environment to do that thinking at speeds that are fundamentally impossible for the classical computers we've been using for 50 years.
The source used a phrase that I absolutely loved for this. It said, quantum enables machines to think faster than thought itself.
It's a poetic way to put it, but the math actually backs it up. To understand why, you have to go back to the limitations we've been hitting with standard AI. We've basically been brute-forcing intelligence by just adding more and more graphics cards to data centers, right?
Right, just making the server farm bigger and bigger.
Exactly. Huh. But classical computing is sequential. It's binary. Bits are zero or one. It's like reading a book one word at a time. You can read fast, but you're still going word by word.
And quantum.
Quantum uses qubits. And thanks to the principle of superposition, a qubit can be zero and one at the same time. Mm. So if classical computing is reading one book at a time, quantum is essentially reading every book in the library at the exact same moment.
Okay, we've heard the library analogy before, but practically speaking, for a business leader or a developer listening to this right now, what does that actually change? Is it just that my data loads faster?
No, it changes the actual type of questions you can ask.
Right.
We're talking about what the report calls impossible problems.
Give me an example of an impossible problem.
Climate simulation is a big one. Or complex financial risk analysis. In the past, if you wanted to model global weather patterns or the fluctuation of the entire stock market, you had to use approximations. You had to guess, really.
Because there are simply too many variables for a classical computer to hold in its head at once.
Exactly. You're getting a sketch. A low-resolution picture. Quantum AI allows you to run the simulation with the real complexity. You aren't approximating anymore, you're actually calculating. We are seeing decision cycles that used to take huge server farms 48 hours to crunch a shrinking down to seconds.
That is a massive efficiency jump. But there was a specific piece of news in the source material that explains why we're talking about this now in 2026 rather than 5 years ago, because quantum has been 5 years away for about 20 years now.
The eternal promise, yeah. But the breakthrough mentioned here involves D-Wave Quantum.
Right, D-Wave.
They released an open source toolkit that plugs directly into PyTorch.
And for the listeners who aren't coding in their spare time, PyTorch is...
It's the bread and butter.
Oh.
It's the standard library that almost everyone uses to build AI models. This integration is huge because previously, if you wanted to use a quantum computer, you basically needed a PhD in physics.
You had to understand quantum mechanics, cooling systems.
Qubit coherence, all of that. You had to be a scientist, not a developer.
Precisely.
But with this D-Wave toolkit, a regular data scientist, someone who builds standard deep learning models, can now route the heavy, complex parts of their problem to a quantum processor just by changing a few lines of code. It totally democratized the speed.
It's like switching your car from gas to electric with a software update.
That's a great way to put it. And that democratization helps explain the salary envy section of the report.
I saw you circling those numbers in the notes.
I mean, how could I not? The USDSI stats are eye-watering.
Break it down for us. If I want to pivot my career today, what am I looking at?
Well, a quantum physicist in 2026 is averaging over $260,000. That's the top tier. But even an applied quantum algorithm developer.
Which, by the way, sounds like the coolest job title you could possibly have on LinkedIn.
It really does. But even they are seeing salaries over $203,000.
It seems like a lot. But if you're the person who can tell a bank, hey, I can predict risk with 99% accuracy in real time, or tell a logistics company you can solve their routing problem in 3 seconds, you're probably underpaid at $200K.
That's the value proposition right there. It's scarcity of talent meeting infinite leverage. If you can solve the impossible problems, you write your own check.
Okay, so that's layer one. We have a quantum brain that can process millions of scenarios in a heartbeat. But a brain in a jar isn't useful. It needs to affect the world. It needs to do things.
Which brings us to layer two, the hands.
Agentic aid.
Agents, the absolute buzzword of the year.
I feel like agent is a term that's getting thrown around very loosely right now. The SAR Council Journal article goes pretty deep into this. What is the hard line between the AI we've had, like the chatbots, and agentic AI?
The line is autonomy. The article describes the shift from reactive to proactive.
Help us visualize that shift.
Think about the best chatbot you used back in 2024. It was amazing, right? But it was a tool. It sat there and waited. You had to type, write me an email. It wrote the email. Then it stopped. It waited for the next command.
It was essentially a very smart typewriter.
Right. It had zero initiative. Agentic AI is a worker. You don't give it a task. You give it a goal. You say, our supply chain in Southeast Asia is looking shaky for Q3. Optimize it.
That's not a prompt, that's a job description.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the agent doesn't just write a paragraph about it. The SAR Council report details the workflow, and it's fascinating. It starts with task decomposition.
Which means it smashes the problem into bits.
Basically, it looks at that huge goal of optimizing the supply chain and breaks it down into subtasks. Check weather patterns. Analyze supplier contracts. Contact logistics partners for quotes. It writes its own to-do list.
Okay, so it plans.
Then it moves to dynamic resource allocation. It figures out, do I need to access the ERP system? Do I need to scrape the web for news? Do I need to email a human? It grabs the tools it needs on the fly. And the most impressive part is exception handling.
This is the part that usually breaks automation.
Right. Usually if a script hits a snag, say a website is down or a file is locked, it errors out, it crashes, you get a pop-up. Agentic AI recognizes the error, self-corrects, finds a workaround, and keeps going. It doesn't need you to come reboot it.
The source used an analogy I really like to explain how these agents work together, the ant colony.
This is the concept of emergent coordination. It's fascinating because it moves away from the idea of one giant godlike AI controlling everything from the top down.
Right. There's no manager ant with a clipboard shouting orders at everyone.
Exactly. In a colony, complex behavior emerges from simple local interactions. One ant leaves a pheromone trail, another follows. In agentic AI, you might have a pricing agent and a logistics agent. They just do their specific jobs, reacting to each other.
So the pricing agent lowers the price, which causes demand to spike.
Which then automatically signals the logistics agent to order more stock.
They coordinate without having a meeting.
They coordinate through the work itself. It's incredibly efficient, but it does lead to the black box problem the source mentions.
The alignment problem.
Right. If you have a swarm of autonomous agents making thousands of micro decisions to maximize profit, how do you ensure they're doing it in a way that actually aligns with human values?
If the goal is just to optimize, the agent might optimize safety checks right out of existence because they slow things down.
Exactly. And because of that complex ant colony nature, it can be very hard to trace back why a decision was made. Explainability becomes the biggest hurdle. You look at the result and say, why did we order 50,000 units of steel? And the answer is buried in a million micro interactions between agents.
So we have the quantum brain thinking fast. We have agentic hands doing the work autonomously. But humans are still in this loop. We need to see what's happening. We need an interface.
That's layer three, the eyes.
Spatial computing.
Now we're looking at the case study from MHT, which is a Porsche company. And I'm glad we have this because spatial computing often gets trapped in the gaming or entertainment conversation.
Yeah, people just think of it as Ready Player One or watching movies on a giant virtual screen in your living room.
But MHP is talking about the industrial metaverse. This is about factories, grease, robots, and high-precision engineering.
Specifically shop floor training. Walk us through the problem they were solving here because it's a classic manufacturing headache.
It really is. Imagine you run a car plant. You have a high turnover, or you're bringing in a brand new model. You need to train staff on complex assembly. Your traditional options are terrible. You either stop the actual production line to let them practice,
which costs thousands of dollars a minute in lost productivity. You're literally burning money.
Or you build a physical replica of the line just for training, which takes up massive space and capital.
So enter the headset. I assume they used the Apple Vision Pro.
They did. MHP and Porsche used the headset to overlay 3D CAD data and robot instructions directly onto the real world. So the trainee stands in a safe room, maybe an empty corner of the warehouse.
Yeah.
But through the headset, they see the machine right in front of them.
Wow.
They see the repair manual floating in the air next to the exact bolt they need to tighten.
It's very Matrix style. I know Kung Fu, but for engine assembly.
It creates a safe failure environment. This is a key psychological point in the report. In a real factory, a new worker is terrified of breaking a $1 million robot.
Or hurting themselves.
Right. In the headset, they can mess up the sequence 10 times. It costs nothing. They build muscle memory without the risk.
The ROI mentioned in the case study was significant in terms of onboarding speed.
Huge. And it addresses the skill shortage directly. You can gamify the learning. It appeals to a younger workforce who grew up with 3D interfaces anyway.
Yeah.
But it's not magic. The report was pretty honest about the downsides.
Motion sickness.
It's still a thing. Latency is much better now in 2026. But if you're in that headset for 2 hours, some people still get queasy. It's a biological disconnect.
And there's the isolation factor, too.
Yeah. You are digitally isolated from your coworkers. You're in your own bubble.
Plus the privacy angle. If everyone is wearing cameras on their face all day.
The union reps definitely have questions about that.
Yeah.
You are scanning the shop floor constantly. Who owns that data? Are you tracking how long the worker takes for a bathroom break? The technology is ready, but the workplace policy is often lagging far behind.
Okay, so let's pause and look at the stack so far. We have massive quantum processing. We have AI agents running around doing tasks. We have high-fidelity 3D spatial rendering. I'm hearing all this, and my brain just goes to one place. Energy.
The utility bill.
This sounds incredibly expensive, not just in dollars, but in kilowatts.
And that is the dark cloud hanging over the 2026 tech landscape, which leads us perfectly to the final layer of our stack, the conscience.
Green ops.
We have a white paper here from Oxygen T, and it makes a bold statement right off the bat. Green ops is no longer a nice to have.
It's the law now.
It effectively is. We have the EU's CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. We have the SEC's climate disclosure rules in the US. You can't just shrug and say you don't know how much carbon your data center uses. You have to measure it, report it, and actually reduce it.
But here is the plot twist in the stack. And I honestly didn't see this coming until I read the USDSI report closely. You'd think adding quantum computing to the mix, this super powerful engine, would make the energy problem worse.
It sounds like adding a jet engine to a bonfire.
Mm.
More power, more heat.
Exactly. But the source argues that quantum AI is actually a pillar of sustainability. How does that math work?
It goes back to that parallelism we talked about at the very start, the library analogy.
Okay, connect the dots for me on that.
To solve a complex optimization problem, let's say routing thousands of delivery trucks, to use the least amount of fuel, a classical supercomputer has to check options one by one. It essentially has to guess and check.
Right.
That takes days of running thousands of processors at 100% capacity. That generates a massive amount of heat and uses a massive amount of electricity.
It's a brute force attack on the problem.
Exactly. Quantum finds the optimal solution in seconds because it looks at all possibilities at once. So even if the quantum computer draws a lot of power for those few seconds, the total energy cost per calculation is a tiny fraction of the classical method.
So efficiency literally is green.
That's the core tenet of GreenOps. It's not just about turning off the lights or buying carbon offsets to feel better. It's about architectural efficiency. The Oxygen at T paper argues that the most sustainable move a CIO can make is moving the heavy workloads to the hardware that solves them fastest.
So in a weird way, the most high-tech sci-fi part of the stack is the thing that might save us from the energy crisis created by the rest of the stack.
That's the hope. It's a closed loop. You use the quantum brain to optimize the agentic hands so they do the work with the least amount of waste, visualized by the spatial eyes, all monitored by GreenOps.
When you put it that way, it really does feel like a completely new operating system for business.
It is. It's moving from digital transformation, which we've been talking about for 10 years, to intelligent automation.
But there is always a but.
We can't let you leave without a headache.
No, we can't. As exciting as this stack is, the integration of these four things raises a question that was buried in the SAR Council article on agentic AI. And it's not a technical question, it's a legal one. Something for you to mull over after this deep dive ends.
Responsibility attribution.
This is the nightmare scenario.
Let's play it out. You have this tech stack running. A quantum-powered agent decides to reroute a shipment of chemicals to optimize for cost. It executes that decision autonomously. A human worker, wearing a spatial headset, sees the instruction to load container B. They load it.
They are just following the overlay. They trust the system.
But the agent made a mistake. Or maybe it didn't make a mistake, but it prioritized speed over safety in a way that wasn't explicitly forbidden in its programming. The container leaks. There's an environmental disaster.
Who do you sue?
Exactly. You blame the worker? They did exactly what the AR headset told them to do. Do you blame the developer? They didn't write the code for that specific shipment decision. The AI learned it. Do you blame the agent? You can't put an algorithm in jail.
It's the liability gap.
It is. And as these systems get more autonomous, as the hands get busier and the brain gets faster, humans are being pushed further out of the decision loop. We are becoming observers of the stack we built.
We're just watching the ants.
And if the ants bite someone, we haven't quite figured out whose fault it is yet.
That is a lot to process. We've gone from quantum mechanics to legal philosophy in a matter of minutes.
That's the nature of the beast today. You can't just learn the tech anymore. You have to understand the real-world consequences.
Well, on that slightly terrifying but exhilarating note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive.
It's been quite a ride.
The major takeaway for me is connectivity. Don't look at these reports or these technologies in isolation. If you're looking at AI, look at the energy cost. If you're looking at VR, look at the training data. It's all one system now.
I couldn't have said it better. Everything is connected.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you in the future.